We're holding on Chof Chesem. All right, so we're holding on Chof Chesem at base, 10 lines from the bottom. 9 lines, rather. Okay, the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Huda and Miskavin Chayim Chola. We said in the Mishnah that the Tanakhama had said that somebody's jug breaks in Rosh Hashanah, somebody else slips on the water or gets injured by the broken pieces of earthenware, then the guy who owned the jug is Chayim. Rabbi Huda says it depends, only if he's Miskavin. So, Heichi Domi Miskavin. What is the definition of Miskavin for this purpose? On the face of it, the Miskavin.
Why do we have to ask him to finish Miskavin?
Because what would it mean? Miskavin usually would mean he means to break the barrel. Why on earth would somebody deliberately break the barrel?
We have so many issues with Kavana, and we never ask what it means to Miskavin. That's something we're asking.
Because, Miskavin. That's why. Because Miskavin, on the face of it, Miskavin can mean, for example, you meant to harm somebody or you're whatever, the sure meant to harm or whatever. Here, you're talking about somebody's jug broke and the water spilled, and now somebody else slipped on the water or got injured by the broken pieces. Miskavin would have to mean that, somebody deliberately, he saw his enemy walking down the street, he deliberately smashed his barrel so the guy will get, come on.
Come on, what?
That's not a typical case, and there's no reason for Rabbi Yehuda to start making such a distinction, Miskavin or not. No, I mean, later on, we'll talk about maybe there is such a thing, but wait. But first, let's see. Amar Rabba, Miskavin lahirid l'matamik sefer. So Rabba says it doesn't mean b'chlal that he meant to break it. It meant that he meant to take it off his shoulder. And then what happened, as he was holding it and carrying it on his shoulder, like Rip the carrying her jug from the well, as he's taking it down to be able to pour from it or whatever, he tripped and it banged against the wall and broke.
So that's some kavana.
That is a certain kavana because he had kavana to take it down. The reason, because Rashi mentions it here briefly, the Gemara is going to expand on it further, there's a concept that we're going to be discussing called nitkal peshe, that if somebody trips and causes something to break, then to a certain extent that is considered a peshia, that's considered a careless act. People don't usually trip. People usually look where they're going.
What's the peshia?
The peshia is that they tripped over his own 2 feet.
So that's the point. What's the
peshia? That's the peshia. That's it.
If
we say nitkal peshea, which as I say, we're going to discuss, then let's go through and we'll see. Let's go through. You'll see as we go through, this concept of nitkal peshea will become more clear. I should mention, just to begin with, by the way, I mean, a couple of Rishonim asked, we learned before, we learned at the very beginning of the parak, the day that I wasn't here, that it's not usual for people to look at what's in the road in front of them because people don't walk with their head down on like animals. People look at their phones. They don't look at what's in the road. Anyway, how does that fit with the nitkal peshea? So there's a couple of possibilities. The Mordechai actually makes the distinction between whether you tripped over something, as in that case where the guy put his jug in Rosh Hashanah and you didn't notice that it was there and tripped over it, versus here where you tripped over your own 2 feet. That's one possibility. The Rashba says they may actually be arguing. We're going to see it.
What about if the road was uneven?
Roads usually in those days weren't even. Because you still have to be careful.
In those days, they were completely uneven.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. The Gemara mentions in a number of places that you can expect there can be up to 3 tefachim difference in height between one part of the road and another. Yeah. The person knows that that's what the roads are like, and therefore a person should know to be able to. Anyway, whatever. So the Mordechai makes that distinction between whether you tripped over something or whether you just tripped over your own 2 feet. But Ashka says maybe the two statements in the Gemara are in fact in disagreement. As we're going to see as we go through the sugya over here, we're going to see that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda argue about one way of looking at it. Anyway, is that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing on exactly this point whether nitkal is peshe or not. Let's go through and we'll see. So, Amalei Abaya. So Abaya says, if you're telling me then that Rabbi Yehuda means miskavim does not mean you meant for the barrel to break. It means you meant to take it down off your shoulder and then you tripped and it broke. What would that, and you're saying only then Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayiv. Miklal the mechayiv Rabbi Meir after the nifshara. So are you telling me then the implication, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, which is a mayor who doesn't make any such distinction between miskavim and ainim miskavim, does that mean even if it was a total oinus, nifshara literally melted, Imagine like the jug just melted while he was carrying it on his shoulder. And all of a sudden you have pieces of it strewn and then water strewn on the ground. Are you gonna tell me your mayor is gonna say you're chayev then also? Amalei, the rabbi said, yes, ain't mechayev hayu rab meir afilo od nebiyadei. As a matter of fact, yes, rab meir would hold that you're chayev for any nezakim that happened as a result of the water or the broken pieces of earthenware or whatever, even if the entire thing melted and all you have left in your hand is the handle of the container. Yes. Well, the question is, am I? Why should you be chayev in that case? Onusu, in that case, it's a total onus. The onus rachmana patre, and we know a general rule, onus rachmana patre. Even at the end of the previous parak, Tosis points out, we learned that there's a difference even when it comes to nizke adam, even when we're talking about directly one person injuring another. We said that adam mur la'olam bein er bein yashin, etc. But nevertheless, we said that in a case of a really unusual onus, nevertheless, we said that he's potter for most things. Why should he be chayev over here? But onus rachmana patre, the Torah patres a person from things that happen due to onus. Just the Blanaro Lysata Dover. It says in the case of onus, as in the onus that we learned about in Ksubas, where a man rapes a Naira Murata, where the Pasuk says, if it was by force, they were out in the field and she cried out and nobody could hurt her, Blanaro Lysata Dover, don't do anything to the girl because she's innocent. The Chitema Hanimil in Ktala, so you might argue, okay, the Torah patres a person from onus when it's a matter of Chiyuv Mitzah, like it would be over there. If it hadn't been onus, she'd be Chayuv Mitzah because she's an Eitz Fish. Avala in Nezakin Chayuv, you could argue maybe by an onus you don't have an exemption from Nezakin. No, the Hatanya, what we learn in a Braitha, Nishpura
Kadev.
No, meaning we do make that distinction. As we learn in a Braitha, Nishpura Kadev Lesuka, if somebody's jug breaks and he doesn't pick up the pieces and remove them from Rishus Rabim, or his camel fell down and he didn't immediately pick it back up to get it out of the way. Rav Meir Mechayev Behezekan. Rav Meir says that you chayev for any nezek that results from them. Whereas the Chachamim say, no, your potter from Dinei Adam, based in cannot force you to pay in that case. You chayev b'dinei shemayim because, after all, you had time to pick up pieces and you didn't. And continues the Braitha, Umodim Chachamim Lera Meir, Ba'avne Sakine Masoy Shenichan Beresh Gagar. The Chachamim do agree to the Meir if you have a stone or a knife or a package that you put up on the top of your roof, but not for the Beruach Matsuya, and they fell down in a normal, respectable wind. Okay. Vihiziku, that they called Hezek, Shehu Chayim. In that case, the Chachamim will agree that you're Chayim, even the Dinei Adam, because there, it was expected. It was expected.
Why
that
they didn't make them hide when he used things on the road or eating his camel on the road?
That's what we're going to have to discuss over here. But the point
that he contradicts.
Well, wait. That's where we have to figure all this out. I mean, one difference is this. Nishpura kadoi, so think of it this way. Nishpura kadoi means there was the thing started out with an onus. If we assume that nitka was not pesheya, which again we're going to get back to this concept, then you dropping your barrel and breaking it is an onus. If you were walking along, you tripped, whether you tripped over something, whether you tripped over your own 2 feet or whatever it is, and broke your cab. So there was an onus at the beginning. Afterwards, you might have had time to pick up the pieces, but you didn't. The case of Avnes Sakinei Masoi. The case of Avnes Sakinei Masoi is where the Chachila, you put it in a careless place. You put it at the edge of your roof, knowing that a wind can easily knock it down, and it can either injure somebody directly by falling on him, or later on by somebody tripping over it. That's the difference.
We said a roof. We didn't say if the roof had a guard or not.
But Mike,
Berosh
Gaga means on the top of his roof, you're talking about up to the Mike. No, it would depend whether Nafla Beruach Matsui, they fell down with a normal wind. In other words, under normal circumstances, if a hurricane came, he would be potter because you can't expect hurricanes.
Normal wind, even if you put a gag and.
A gag is a roof. You mean a mica?
A
if you put a mica, then fine. Why would he be higher? In that case, the mica would normally stop him from falling.
Normally, but there's one piece that just fell over.
I don't know. I mean, if there's a mica has to be 10 tefachim tall. A ruach matsuya is not going to pick up one piece and knock it over.
10
tefachim is enough to, you know. Again, Basin would have to figure out what the situation is over here. Is it something that under normal circumstances? Okay, so fine.
Okay.
But the difference is, again, nishpura kadai and nafla gmaloi is something where l'chatchila was an onus. The burr, whatever you want, the tachala, whatever, came about through an onus, as opposed to over here, it came about by you being careless. That's right. So the Chachamim agree that in that case, you chayav. And here's the key point, which is why we're bringing in this b'raisa, which afterwards we're going to analyze the whole b'raisa, but for the moment, we're trying to bring it in because we wanted to ask that you're arguing, Abaya is telling Rabbi, you're arguing that the mayor would say you're chayav no matter what, even if the whole thing started out as an onus. But I can prove to you from this b'raisa that the mayor would make a distinction between different kinds of onusim. Because the b'raisa continues, umoded a mayor the rabbanon, the mayor will agree with the rabbanon. The malakan kanin al gagbon nagron. Suppose that somebody took barrels onto the roof to dry them. So he just, you know, he had a potter make containers for him, or he himself made them, whatever. Afterwards, they need to dry out a while before they're suitable for use. He put them up on the roof. Where, when you put them up on the roof, you don't normally, it's one thing, Tosfos points out, that Ashba points out in more detail.
The driver.
Yes, but the difference is that when it comes to a stone or a knife or whatever, you might not care that much to be careful to put it well in from the edge of the roof so wind doesn't knock it down. When it comes to these kankanim, you know they're fragile, and you're putting them up there because you want them to be finished so you can start using them. You're not going to put them close to the roof. At the edge of the roof. Necessarily, you're going to put them in the middle of the roof. You're going to make sure that it's not a situation where a normal wind can knock it down. And therefore, if you did that, but they fell down with an unusually strong wind, that in that case, you are potter. That your mayor said that. So you see that even the mayor holds that in certain cases of onus, you're potter. So back to our case over here, Rabbi is saying not only if you tripped and dropped your barrel, are you going to be higher for any resulting damage? But even if the barrel melted on your shoulder, dissolved on your shoulder, why? Wouldn't that be the case of Tankanim on the roof? Hello, I'm an Abaya, so no. Abaya says, what you have to say is actually the Tauti. You have to, of necessity, say that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda in our Mishnah, and also, as we'll see in the Braisa, are actually arguing about two different issues. Pligi b'shas nefila or pligi la'acha nefila. Number one, they're arguing about something that happened at the time when the person fell or when the jug fell, and then they're also arguing what happens afterwards. Now, by the way, Tosfos says Rashi and Tosfos have somewhat different opinions on this. Rashi learns that b'shas nefila means literally as the jug is falling, it caused damage, as opposed to la'acha nefila would be any time after it fell. Tosfos learns that b'shas nefila includes the first few seconds after that, during which there's not yet time to pick up pieces. After that, after you had sufficient time to pick up the pieces, and you didn't, that's called la'acha nefila. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir would be arguing on both of those cases, what's the liability of the person? So, pligi b'shas nefila b'nitka p'sheya. The machloek is about what happens as the jug is falling or during the few seconds after it fell, whatever. The machloek is on this concept of nitka b'nitka p'sheya. They're arguing on this concept that we introduced at the beginning of the sugya of nitka p'sheya. The fact that he tripped, does that in and of itself make him a p'sheya? Is tripping itself a p'shia? Is tripping itself and causing it, which then caused the barrel to break, considered a careless action? Where you should have taken care to step properly so that you don't trip over your own 2 feet. So in other words, not like Rabba was saying that the mayor would be machayev of you if the pitcher melted. No, for sure you're going to be potter. No question. That's a case of completely unexpected onus. You took reasonable precaution. The question is, if the person tripped and then the barrel broke, is that considered that he took reasonable precautions or not? Or is it considered that he's a pesheya? Therefore, what will happen is the mayor will hold that a nitkal, somebody who trips, is considered a pesheya. Therefore, in all cases, he's going to be chayev. That's your mayor. He's going to say, therefore, that in all cases, when the barrel or the water causes damages, b'shas nefila, as it's falling or during the first few seconds before you have time to pick it up, he would nevertheless say, you're chayev, even though there was no kavana, even though ainu miskaven, because again, the mayor did not make that distinction in the Mishnah, because the very fact that you tripped and the barrel broke itself means that you were pesheya. Because you should have looked where you're going and not tripped. Umar Saban. Come on. If he had a stroke, then the Adim will see that. And when the case comes to Basin, they'll say, you know, there was an...
He was dehydrated.
Fine. So in all those cases, these are things that will be adjudicated. These are all things that would be adjudicated and based in on a case-by-case basis. We're talking about the normal situation. The guy tripped, but other than that, he's a healthy, normal individual. Yeah.
He lost his glasses, but he trips. What happens? Who's higher?
If he lost his glasses, then how did he lose them? I don't know. I mean, Well, Marsov and Nikola Pesher, who is Rabbi Huda, will hold that tripping is not ipso facto itself of Shia. Therefore, if the jug, therefore only if they, therefore we're back to when the Mishnah said Miskaven versus Einim Miskaven, since in this case it was Einim Miskaven, he didn't mean to trip, then he's potter. That's machlokas number one, said the Bayah. Then machlokas number two, pligi la'acha nefila. Then they're also arguing what happens after the barrel fell. So after, let's say, according to Rashi, any time immediately after, or thereafter, until he picks up the pieces, according to Tosfos, once a few seconds have passed, once it's enough time that you could have picked it up, and you didn't, and now it's full laugh on the field.
1 minute.
Again, that's what you need. In all these cases, you're going to have Edim. We're not talking about he says.
We have Edim.
So there's Edim, and then they're going to do. Basin is going to interrogate the agent. What was the circumstance of it?
Right.
The guy tripped in Rosh Hashanah, dropped his barrel, it broke, somebody else came by, tripped on it.
Right.
What was the situation with the guy who was holding the barrel? Was he conscious afterwards? Was he unconscious?
Of course
you have to take such things. Again, we're talking about if he's still conscious, if
he's the rush.
Doesn't matter. If he's capable of picking up the pieces, then if he's capable of picking up the pieces, then we can argue whether Nittal Peshea or not. And if he's not capable of picking up the pieces, then that's a different situation. So the machloikas la'acha nefila would be b'maskir nezako. Suppose that afterwards, after he dropped the barrel and it broke, suppose he's maskir, and again, he has to be conscious for that, obviously. If he's maskir, his nezik. If he's saying, you know what, forget about it, the broken pieces of earthenware are worthless anyway, the water is puddled on the ground over here, I can't do anything with it, I'm just maskir the whole thing.
If he's maskir, let's
say... Well, the question boils...
He cannot take them.
Of course he could take them if he wanted to.
Not necessarily.
Maybe not necessarily. If he wanted to take these broken pieces, and the Gemara is going to take up that possibility soon, he could, conceivably, the broken pieces...
He would not necessarily be able to.
I don't understand. In a normal situation, again... Talk about a normal situation. A person is walking down the street, carrying a barrel, trips, the barrel breaks. Now he has a choice. First of all, the first thing you should be doing right away is cleaning up the pieces before somebody else comes by and trips over them. Second of all, within that, though, if he leaves the pieces there, there's two possibilities. He could be maskew them. He could be saying, forget it, I'm not going to bother with them. Or he could be thinking to himself, you know what, I will come back and get them. I can find some use for them. So the case over here is, suppose that he was maskir these things. And Rashi points out, usually after the barrel breaks, you would assume he probably is maskir it. Therefore the Mishnah, and as we'll see, the Braisa, can assume that to be the case without specifying.
Okay.
The question then boils down to this. We learned about this before. We learned previously when we talked about Burr before in the first parak and earlier in our parak for that matter. We're going to learn it more extensively later in the Masechta. That what exactly is the case when the Torah is mechayev you for the nezek of Burr? Is it a case where that we know it's a Burr b'shus Rabim? So is it a case where the reshus, where the burr is located in his hefker, and the burr itself is hefker as well? Or is it a case maybe where the reshus is hefker, but the burr is not? Maybe the person still wants to retain rights over that burr. Now, depending on how you look at that, is how you're going to look at it over here. These pieces, these broken pieces of earthenware are lying in the street. They constitute a burr. Depending how we look at it, whether he retains ownership of them or not is going to be affected by the machlokes of when the situation of burr applies. So, mar sava maskin is also chayev, mar sava potter. So we would say then that Rav Meir would say, even though you're maskir, you're nezik, because even though you were maskir it, because the case where the Torah is machayev you for burr is you dug a burr in Shusar Abim, you were maskir it. That's how we're going to have later in the Masechta, we're going to have a machloikas of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva on the subject as well. That you dig a boat in Rosh Hashanah, presumably one way of looking at it is that you intend to declare the Borehek, so you're not planning to keep it for your own use. It's sitting there in the middle. In this case, leaving the pieces there and making an hefker is the equivalent of that. Yet the Torah is Machayev. You have a Nafal Shama Shara Chamar, if an ox or a donkey falls in.
The negligence is not to leave the pieces, it's the Machayev.
The point is, according to that way of looking at it, if you were not master them, it would not be a din of bur, because a din of bur is when you master them. Whereas the other way of looking at it is that no, a bur applies when you actually own the bur. So therefore, Umar self a potter. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would hold that it's potter because it has to be that the bird that the Torah is talking about is the case where you still own rights over the bird. You and you intend to retain rights over the bird. Here you didn't. You were mad here. So therefore, how does that fit with our Mishnah? So therefore, Rashi explains like this. Rabbi Yehuda would be saying like this. When Rabbi Yehuda says in our Mishnah, Miskaven versus Enim Miskaven, say Miskaven Yuchayev, Enim Miskaven Yupotter, is... it means like this. Miskaven, first of all, Miskaven, if you meant to break it and it caused damage, benefila, then you'd be chayav. As opposed to if you didn't mean to break it, if you tripped, nitkalav pesheya, according to the Yehuda, tripping is not.
Meaning, what does it mean, Miskaven, by the way?
Miskaven means with intention. But it means, in other words, we would say that by implication, the Mishnah is telling us of two machlokes. Number one, how did it break in the first place? Was there kavana involved or not? Rabbi Meir says it doesn't matter. Even if there was no kavana, nitkal, nevertheless, you're pesheya and you're chayav. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, no, only if you attack a net to break the barrel. If you didn't, if you tripped, you're not a pesheya, and therefore you're potter. If it caused any damage as it's falling. Machlokas number two is, when we say, machlokas number two would be whether you will mask the pieces afterwards. So miskaven, whereas the Gemara will say later, means miskaven would mean that you're intending to take ownership of the pieces. So then you'd be chayev. Okay, so the Gemara says in Wimai.
Would say, even if you mean maskir, it's still
chayev. Rameo would say that, yes. Rameo would say that even if you maskir, you're still chayev. Okay, the Gemara says, Umimai. Now, how do we know that indeed is the case? How do we know, Taka, that the Mishnah is implying that there's a double machloikas? The Mishnah only says that Rav Meir says Yechayim and Rav Yehuda says Miskaven, yes, not Miskaven, no. Where do you see in that two machloikas in about two different scenarios?
The Mishnah doesn't talk about it.
Right. The answer is Midikotoni Tauti. You can infer that from the fact that the Mishnah mentioned two cases. Because the Mishnah mentioned, the Mishnah mentioned one case where somebody slipped on the water, and the other case where somebody got injured by one of the broken pieces of earthenware. Now you should have to ask, I know how. Why does the Mishnah have to tell us both? On the face of it, it amounts to the same thing. Either way, there was a nezek. Who cares what the details were of how the hezek was?
Two mentions means that there's
two cases, the mention in the Mishnah. El olam hakakamar. Evidently, then, that is what the Mishnah means to imply. Huchlok echad b'mayim b'shat nefila, that, for example, somebody slipped on the water as it was falling. That's machloikas number one, because there the machloikas is whether niktal is pesheya or not. And number two, ashaloka b'chartis la'acha nefila. Or number two, that he was injured by one of the broken pieces after they fell down, and there the machloikas would be whether you were master those, whether you, the owner of the thing, were master the pieces or not. So the Gemara continues. Fine. If we're going to say then that the Mishnah is implying that there are actually two machlokes in, one about what was the cause of the fall, and number two, what happened after the fall, then we have to assume Braisa Nami Batarti. Then we should have to assume the Braisa is also telling us about two different cases. The Braisa had said that the Braisa had mentioned that a jug breaks and you didn't pick up pieces, or your camel fell and you didn't pick up the camel. And then we mentioned a couple of cases where the Chachamim agree with the mayor and the mayor agrees with the Chachamim. So in that case, we should have to assume that the two cases the Braisa mentioned, the jug and the camel, also represent two different scenarios. One that is talking about what happened as it was falling, and the other about what happened after. Because the Braisa is giving more detail.
What kind of more detail?
First of all, the Braisa is giving the details of when Rav Meir would agree with the Chachamim, and when the Chachamim would agree with Rav Meir. That's what I meant. In the Braisa, it's phrased as Rav Meir versus the Chachamim. The Chachamim and the Braisa evidently are of Yehuda. But yeah. So we have to ask, Vishlema Kadri Mashkahatla, or the Shaf Nafila Ilahanafila. Fine, if you're gonna go that way, then the Mishnah is not saying, for example, that in the case of that Nishvara Kadri is one case and well, let's put it this way. In other words, if we say that the Braita is telling them two different cases, number one where you jug broke, where the mayor and Rabbi Yehuda would argue on it, and number two, where your camel fell, where Rabbi Yehuda and the mayor would argue on it, in each case, they would argue on both of the details mentioned that we mentioned so far. One, what happened while it fell, was it carelessness that it fell? And number two, what happened afterwards, were you master it or not? Let's analyze, can we make that fit with the words of the Braita? Bishlema Kadri, so I can understand when it comes to the jug. Fine, you can say when it comes to the jug, you have both of those possible cases. Number one, they can be arguing about if while the jug was falling, somebody slipped on the water, and somebody slipped on the water. And you could have the same double argument that we said Rameir and Rabbi Hoda are having. Number one, when you dropped it in the first place, was that carelessness on your part that you tripped? And number two, afterwards, were you mafia the pieces or not? So, okay, let's consider. I can understand they'd be arguing about what happened after the camel fell down, because you could have, what are the two possibilities? The guy decides to be mafia the dead animal. I can't do anything with it anyway. I may as well leave it. Or not. So then, fine. Rameir would be arguing that you chayev that you chayev even if you were maskir, and Rabbi Yehuda would hold that you're not. Ela b'shas nefila, heich mashkachafla. How do you have a case of b'shas nefila? How can you say that it would be a pesheya that the fact that his camel fell down? How could he have stopped the camel from falling down? So if you're gonna
load it in less.
No.
Overloaded his camel and he fell, and if you loaded in less, then he would not have fallen, like we saw, like the Bashan. When he was running close to the camel, he overloaded all his camel. Here, you could say the same.
Scenario.
We said over there.
First of all, we assume over here the camel fell down and actually died. So
because of
an overload. Okay, but if it were going to happen, most likely it would have happened at some. I don't know for sure, but I would imagine it would have happened sometime before that. It's not all of a sudden.
Yeah, it happened all of a sudden.
Okay. So if that's the case, then what would be the distinction over here? What
exactly?
Wait. So okay.
Exactly.
Fine. So okay. You
don't finish at all from the right.
Well, that's the problem then. Well, then so we have to give a different answer.
Right.
Fine. Let's say, for example, that you took the camel on the road on a road where the river has flooded. So normally the road is dry, and the camel could be expected to walk normally. Like this, the road was flooded. Therefore, the camel couldn't see where it was walking and ended up tripping. Therefore, you're a pesher. Yeah, so I suppose your example, where you're overloaded, I suppose that would fit into the same thing also. Okay, the guy supposedly could have given that possibility also, yeah. So that's, okay. Okay, so the question, but then the question is, hey, if you dummy, fine, but then we have to consider, what's the scenario? Is there another alternate route that you could have taken where the road wasn't flooded? In that case, for sure, Pesheahu, then okay, there's no question, it's Pesheah, then you can't even apply the rule of Nitzal. That's why we can't talk about your case of overloading it, because we have to assume that there's sort of a gray area over here. The way that you set out with the animal in and of itself was not a Pesheah. Something happened on the way when the proximate cause of the animal tripping may or may not have been a Pesheah. That's what we're trying to figure out. If you overloaded the animal to begin with, then it's Pesheah to begin with when you first set out. We're talking about that something happened right before. So that's what we're trying to figure out. If the road is flooded and you could have gone another way, then yeah, as soon as you set out on that road, you're a Pesheah. Then you can't even say that you have any excuse of Nitzal. And Rabbi Yehuda and Rameh are arguing whether you're a Pesheah or not. For sure you're a Pesheah in that case.
They take into consideration this? The fact that you may use the road that was dangerous?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. We're trying to figure out when the Braita, if we're assuming that the Braita is telling us that they're arguing in all cases, they're arguing on what happened when things fell and what happened after it fell. when it fell, they're arguing, is the Niftal a Pesheya or not? That means we have to have a scenario that you could find some reason to call him a Pesheya, and you could find him some reason to not call him a Pesheya. If it was a flooded road, and you could have equally taken some other road, then you're a Pesheya, no question about it. Rabbi Yehuda is not going to argue you're not a Pesheya in that case. The idolect of Dak Akrina, and if there's no other road to go, onosu, then it's an onus. Then even a mayor can't call you a Pesheya for that. Ella, no, let's give a different answer. Mashkachas la de'itkil de'itkil adeh gemala. No, you could answer that the case is that he himself tripped, the person himself tripped, and then the camel tripped over him, and fell down, and somebody, and some other person or animal or what have you tripped over the camel and got him himself tripping. We're back to Nitzal Pesheya. We're talking about the normal road, and there's a normal road, not flooded or anything. You are walking along, as we were just discussing, that Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing whether Nitzal is Pesheya or not. Well, very well. If we say, according to the Meir, Nitzal Pesheya, the very fact that you tripped as a Pesheya, okay, if it had just been that you tripped, there wouldn't have been any further consequences from it. Fine, you trip, you brush yourself off, and you continue. Like this, you caused your camel to trip, and it caused the whole pile up. Yeah. So therefore, so we could say that the Braita is telling us that they're actually arguing on that case as well. Again, the Braita is telling us. First of all, the Braita is telling us different scenarios, but it's telling us more details. Yeah. So now the question becomes: Masker Nizak of my Miskavenika. Back to, if we're going to say that the Meir and the Yehuda in the Mishnah are arguing on these two cases, number one, what happened when the thing fell, and number two, what happened after it fell. So we said the machlokes about after it fell is whether you masker the broken pieces or not. How does Miskaven fit into that? Miskaven liskes b'charasel. Miskaven in that case would mean that you had in mind to be zoche in the broken pieces. So even though they're broken, you still have intention to retain ownership of them. And that is why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're chayev, because that's what he holds, that's the definition of a bird, is where you intend to retain ownership of it. As opposed to if you were makir, then he would say you're bothered. And so also Rav Ashi says the same thing, that it means that miskaven means that he intended to be zoche in the broken pieces. So therefore, again, in our Mishnah, when Rabbi Yehuda said "miskaven chayev she'ein miskaven potter," it has a double meaning. Says Abaye so far. It means number one is, did you intend to break the barrel versus did you trip? And number two, did you intend to take the pieces of the broken barrel and keep them for yourself, or were you just going to leave them there as extra?
Are we saying you need both conditions?
No, they're two different cases. Number one, if somebody tripped on the barrel or slipped on the water or whatever as it was falling, or according to Tosis, right after it fell, that would be one machlokes. Is the fact that you tripped, is that itself a pshia?
I understand it's two machlokes.
That's what we're saying.
That's related to two different conditions, but do we need, according to both machlokes, two of these elements?
So far, we're saying no. So far, according to Abaye, they're not related. Once you tripped, let's say even we go with Rabbi Yehuda that Nikolas Pesheu, but once you tripped, if you nevertheless decided, you know what, I'm going to keep these broken pieces for myself, and you don't clean them up, you have created a bird. You're chayev for that. So you won't be chayev for any injury that were caused while it was falling off you, or immediately after it fell off you, or whatever, because then we'd say Nikolas Pesheu, but you would be chayev for anything that happened afterwards when you, yeah. So we're going to see later on the base, we're going to see that Rabbi Yochanan does not necessarily agree with that. So wait. Okay.
Continues the Gemara.
Well, wasn't it Rabbi Yochanan the Amora? Continues the Gemara. Rabbi Loza over b'shas nefilah machlokes. Rabbi Loza says the machlokes is what happens when the thing is falling. So you have to ask, what does that mean? Avalach nefilah ma'ay divah akopalter. What do you mean? So if when it comes to anything that happened later on after it fell down and you didn't clean it up, you would say that Rabbi Loza would say Rabbi Loza this that Rabbi Loza the Amora. Would say that both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir would say you're potter. What do you mean? Well, you could have Meir to Mechayev. But we have the case of Rabbi Meir who says you're chayev, because the Braisa clearly mentioned a case where loy silka, where you didn't pick up the broken pieces, or loy ha'emido, you didn't pick up the dead camel and remove it, and then you're chayev. So we see Rabbi Meir would hold you definitely are chayev for not removing the pieces. Elamai, Dirakal Chayev. So what are you going to argue?
Not as this before or after the Nefilah.
No, after the Nefilah necessarily. No, you can't pick up the pieces before the Nefilah. Yeah. So So if Rav Elazar is saying, b'shas nefilah machloikas, we have to figure out, what is he implying? Is he implying that everybody would agree that achad nefilah yipater? Can't. We know Rav Meir says yipater. Or yuchayev. Elamai divakol chayev, or you could rabbanon apatri. And you can't say it would mean that everybody would hold yuchayev in that case, because the rabbanon, in the b'raith, the meaning of Yehuda, said that yipater. V'chachamimim, yipater medidon, v'chayev medin shemayim. So no matter what, so obviously they're arguing about la'ach and the fila as well.
I mean, you're still chayv again.
Fine, but chayv again shemayim means that you have a moral obligation, basically. It means there's no legal obligation on you in basin. Normally, when you're talking about chayv and potter and dinin izakin, we mean the dinay otter. Yes. Ella, so you have to say, my b'shat nefila, ach b'shat nefila. No, you have to say then that. You have to say that what Rav Elazar means to say, he wants to inform you that they're also not that they're only arguing about what happened in the Shas Nefila. They're also arguing about what happened in the Shas Nefila. That they're arguing on both the Shas Nefila and La'achar Nefila. V'kamash malon k'dabaya. What Rav Elazar is trying to tell us is, I'm telling you exactly what Abaya is saying. Rav Elazar lived before Abaya too. So Rav Elazar, in his time, just said v'shach nefila machloikis, from which we deduce that he meant that they're actually arguing in both cases, which means that he anticipated what Abaya spelled out in more detail in the next generation. So the Gemara just put it first because we started with the whole discussion of Rabba versus Abaya, and that led us into the whole thing. But previously, in the previous generation, Rav Elazar had already known of this concept and mentioned it briefly just with these words, v'shach nefila machloikis. Now, yet another opinion, Rabbi Yochanan Amar. La'acha nefila machloikas. Rabbi Yochanan says that the machloikas is after the thing fell. Okay, so now let's analyze. What does he mean? What? Damur, Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so you have to ask, Avav Shas nefila my divya hakapater. So what is Rabbi Yochanan implying? That if it caused damages while it was falling, or immediately after it fell, then everybody would agree with Potter. How could that be?
By implication.
If you say la'acha nefila machloikas, so yeah. But we're going to find later on that Rabbi Yochanan is going to be saying, in connection with a mission later in our parak, in a couple of blah, there's a case over there where you have two potters walking one after another in the street, and one of them trips and the other one falls on him. So the Mishnah and the Gemara discuss over there what the chiyuv of the first one is. So Rabbi Yochanan says, "Loi tema masnis in Rameyer he damon nitko pesherhu." He starts by saying, "Don't think that the Mishnah is only according to the mayor who holds that nitko is considered a pesher, but rather I can explain the Mishnah according to everybody." Rabbi Yochanan says over there, but leaving aside the rest of that discussion, the father of mayor Mechayev, obviously that means that Rabbi Yochanan would hold that. Obviously Rabbi Yochanan holds that according to the mayor, nitko is pesher. So therefore, so definitely b'shas nefila. B'shas nefila, at the very least, you have Rabbi Meir saying he's chayev, and by implication, you have other chachamim, including Rabbi Yehuda, saying he's potter. So how can Rabbi Yochanan rather be saying that they're only arguing about la'acha nefila? Elamai divrahakol chayev. So what are you going to argue that Rabbi Yochanan would argue that you want to say that b'shas nefila, everybody would agree you're chayev? Can't. By the same implication, because that same statement, Rabbi Yochanan says later, the implication of that statement is that the Rabbanon would pass a case of Nitkal. He's not a Peshea. So obviously, Rabbi Yochanan knows that there's a machloikas on the question of Nitkal. So he can't be saying that everybody agrees when the guy is nitzal he's going to be chayiv, because then that doesn't fit with the chachamim. He can't say that everybody agrees that he's potter, because that doesn't fit with the mayor. So what is it? And also, Mefarshim point out the fact that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, for Rabbi Yochanan omer la'acha nefila machloikas, since it follows directly on what Rabbi Elazar said, the implication is he's trying to argue with Rabbi Elazar. He's trying to argue with Rabbi Elazar.
Who is
Rabbi Yochanan? Evidently, is arguing with Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar, we just explained before, said they're arguing in both cases. He holds like a bias. You can't say Rabbi Yochanan before and after. You can't say Rabbi Yochanan is saying la'acha nefila machloikas, implying that it's both, because he'd be saying exactly the same thing as Rabbi Elazar. He has to be arguing. But how could he be arguing? What does he think happens? B'shas nefila. We know there's machloikas from Meir and Rabbi Yehuda on that. Ella, no. Hokamash malon. No, what Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell you is the key thing is not in what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. It's not really the word la'achar, but the word nefila. that the Rabbi Yochanan is not really focusing on what whether it's before or whether it's during the fall or afterwards. He's more focusing on the fact that it was the result of a fall, because what he says is Hakamashmon the Masker Nizak of Dehacha who departed Abanan the Onitsu. In a case like this, is when the Rabbanan, meaning Rabbi Huda, would say that if you're Masker, you're Nezek, that if you're Masker, you're broken pieces, then you'll be Potter. The Onitsu, because the whole thing started out as an Onitsu. Abba Masker Nizak of the Alma Machaibi, but in a normal case, in a regular case, if a person were to just put down a rock in a Shasar Abim and we Masker it, then Rabbi Huda would agree with Chayev on that.
And here, we're saying they argue on whether or not
In other words, Rabbi Yochanan is saying like this. Again, the key word in Rabbi Yochanan's statement is not la'achar, but rather mefila. It's as if you know, if we were there in the Bismedrish and we heard Rabbi Yochanan saying it, he isn't saying la'achar mefila machlokas, he'd be saying la'achar mefila machlokas. That after it fell is when you can be arguing, does he have the ability to be machkirit and be potter or not? As opposed to if it didn't fall, if he deliberately knocked it down, for example, and broke, then there's no question he doesn't have the ability to be master it.
It's also about the ability.
In other words, when Abaya was saying on Amar Aleph that they're arguing on two things. Number one, how did the thing come to break? Was it an onus or not? Was he for share or not? Number two, what happened after it broke? Is he able to be master and be potter or not? Rabbi Yochanan is saying they're only arguing on the second. They're only arguing on if it fell by an onus. And let's assume, fine, we'll assume Nikolav Pesheyahu, who will assume that him falling and breaking is not considered a pshit. Afterwards, then, the argument would be, does he have the ability afterwards to remaster these pieces? Where Rabbi Meir would say that no, and Rabbi Huda would say that yes. As opposed to, if it was definitely a pshit, if he deliberately broke it, for example,
he would not.
Then he would not. Then even Rabbi Huda would agree he does not have the ability to be master.
There's three issues, basically.
Three.
There's one, the fact whether he can master it or not, which has been the feeling.
Well, whether he can be master really boils down to, is he chayek with it? Of course he can be master it, but does his being master it have an effect
right.
as far as pastor?
That's
yeah.
what I meant.
Yeah. All right.
And
so before, so that's the thing. Abaya and Rabbi Lazar had said that they're arguing on that, but they're also arguing to begin with when it fell, was that a pshia or not? Rabbi Yochanan is saying, leave aside the question of what happened when it fell. The key question is afterwards, after it fell, but onus, can he pastor himself by being master? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it.
That's probably not.
No. Okay. Itmar. So now we have a discussion on that very point. Masker Nefasa, Masker Nezakov, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar argue on that concept. Chadam Achayev, Chadam Apasar. One of them, we don't know yet which one is which, that's the Gemara is going to figure out soon, but one of them holds that if you Masker, you're Nezakim, then you're Chayev, the other one says you're Apasar. So, Leim Amandam Achayev Kira Meir, Amandam Apasar Kira Banan. Should we infer that whichever one says is chayev is saying that I agree with your mayor, and whichever one says potter says I agree with the rabbanon, which we wouldn't usually want to do that. But halacha is like the rabbanon; we prefer to say that both amirayim are going according to the rabbanon. Yeah. So the answer is no. I'll leave it to the mayor. Kol amalei tzvi. No, when it comes to within the mayor's opinion, everybody agrees that you're for sure chayev. Because again, Rav Meir would say that even though you dropped the thing by earning it, even though you tripped, you're always chayev. So for sure, and even you can't even be machzir it afterwards, even though l'chatchila you tripped. How much more so if l'chatchila you put something down and I'm machzir it? Yeah.
Only according to the Rabbanan, you say you pass it.
Only right. That's the point. So therefore, she pligi, I'll leave it to the Rabbanan. So what Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar would be arguing within the opinion of the Rabbanan. Which that way, that's better to say, because then you can say they're both, I'll leave it to the Rabbanan. Yeah. Manda potter ke Rabbanan. Whichever one of them says you potter says, okay, very simple. The Rabbanan say you're able to be master it, at least after you dropped the voidness. Fine. So then in that case, then that implies that you're potter.
Regardless of what the intent.
Yeah. Manda machayev. Whereas whichever one says you chayev, omolach, he would say, I know the amri afilu rabbanon. Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. Whichever one of them, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, wants to say you chayev, would still say that even the rabbanon would agree with that. That the rabbanon themselves would make a distinction, how did this nezek come to exist in the first place that you're trying to be master. Again, before we were talking about the scenario that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda were arguing about was you tripped, you dropped your barrel, the pieces shattered, and now you were master it. But what Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar are arguing about is a case of maskeh nezakeh where it didn't even come there ba'onus in the first place. You deliberately put something down in a reshus harabim and we'll maskeh it. So that, we could argue, that one way of looking at it is that Rabbanan wouldn't make a distinction, no matter how the pieces got there, whether it was ba'onus or berotzen, once you maskeh it, you could argue that Rabbanan, meaning Rabbi Yehuda, would say you're potter. Or, the opinion that says that is Machayev could say that what I'm saying is even according to the Rabbanan. Ad kan le patur Rabbanan el b'maskur nezakim d'hocha. The Rabbanan are only paturing him when he's maskur nezakim in this particular case where he accidentally dropped his barrel. B'shem d'onusu, because there was an onus, the fact that he tripped. Aval maskur nezakim d'alma, but in a regular case where he's maskur nezik, where he didn't drop it, where there was no onus in that nezek coming into Rosh Hashanah in the first place. Mechayev, in that case, even the Rabbanon might agree that Yechayev.
And who would be of that opinion? The
next thing we need to figure out, which one says which. The Gemara starts off. Kistayim, we can conclude, or we can prove, we should be able to conclude that Rabbi Elazar is the one who says that Yechayev. Even though you were master, these things, nevertheless, you'd still be Chayev. Why? The Amar Rabbi Elazar, Meshum Rabbi Shmuel, because Rabbi Elazar says in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, Shnei Dvarim Einin Rishus Hashaladim, there are two things that are not actually in a person's Rishus, Ba'aston, Akosu Kilohen Birshusa, and yet the Pasuk considers them as if they are in his Rishus. Ve'elohen, Bur Birshus Rabim, V'chomet Mishay Shoi Tzalamayla. Number one, a Bur Birshus Rabim, if we take the view, as we were talking about on Amar Aleph, that the Bur Birshus Rabim is something which is Hefker, where you master the Bur, you dug a burr of Rishus Rabim. The Rishus Rabim itself obviously is Hefker, and the burr itself, let's say you declared Hefker. Yet, according to that way of looking at it, according to Rabbi Shmuel's way of looking at it, the Torah is nevertheless holding you responsible for what happens if an animal falls into that burr and gets killed or injured. So even though the burr doesn't belong to you, the Torah considers it as if it did and makes you liable. And chometz, Meshay Shoyis Salamayla, chometz on Erev Pesach, after the sixth hour of the day, after 6 hours into the day, when we did Isa at that point, it becomes also, we know, when you're a bon, you know, you can't have to stop eating after 4 hours and burn it by the end of the fifth hour. When you're Isa, the way back in Sochim, you have 6 full hours in the day. At that point, it's also to you, it's Bal Yiro, Bal Yimase. You're not allowed to have, it's not in your possession anymore, you're not allowed to have Hanah from it, etc. Yet the Torah considers it in your possession in the sense that if you have it in your Rishus, you're over on the Isra of Bal Yoror and the Isra of Bal Yomaseh. So even though it's not yours, the Torah considers it to that extent, as if it's yours, and makes you chayev,
But if you sold it.
If you sold it, that's different, then it's not yours. If it's yours, you didn't sell it. You didn't sell it to a goy, you didn't declare it hektish, you didn't nothing. You didn't bother getting rid of it. You kept it. Comes 6 hours in the day of Erev Pesach, the Torah takes it out of your possession. You don't own it anymore because you're not allowed to have hanah from it. However, it is considered in your possession in the sense that you're chayev for having it around. So those are the two things. That's what actually points out. There's an interesting thing. If you master it before the 6 hours, you can do that. Once the 6 hours come, it's not yours anymore.
Before the 6 hours, without coming into something.
Yeah, you can be, Minat Torah, you can be master. Minat Torah, all you need is Bittul. Midrabbanon, we're concerned, as we learned way back in Sochim, Shemayim to Gluska Yopa. You may find a nice looking piece of bread during Pesach and decide, you know what, forget about the Bittul or not even had in mind to evaporate it properly in the first place. And then you're in the Bittul, and that's why the Chachamim made the Takana that you actually have to search and destroy the Chachamim.
What's the difference between Bittul and Maftir in this case?
There isn't really a difference, practically speaking. I mean, it amounts. I mean, bittul, as you're saying, it's kaf for the aret, like the dust for the earth. So it's free, it's free for the taking. Yeah, it's essentially a kind of hef. So maybe there is some subtle difference. I don't know. Anyway, it's interesting. In the back of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, there's shuvas from there. There's a couple of dozen shuvas from the Alter Rebbe. There's one very long one. Somebody sent him a complicated question in Hilchos Treifos. And at the end, he writes, by the way, since there's a little bit of a paper left and I don't want to leave it blank, let me take the opportunity to ask you a question about a Gemara, about a Stira in the Gemara. So that's something that we'll learn later on in our Masechta about the case of a Shur on Nitzvah, a Shur that has to be stoned for killing somebody. So yes, the Gemara seems to imply over there that even though you don't own the thing anymore, but yet you have the ability to declare it Hefker or something like that. So the guy asked, how does that work? Not the Rebbe has a long answer, and after he finishes with the Treifus problem, he deals with that. In the course of that, the Al Shadeva says that really when you get down to it, then the Al Shadeva points out over there, you actually have, when Rabbi Lazar is saying over here, there's two things that are not for Rishus HaShalotim, but the Torah considers it as if it's in your Rishus. There really are more than two. Shadon Nisko was another one, a couple of others. What we mean is, the reason why Rabbi Lazar is saying only two is because these are the only two that it explicitly says in the Pasuk. The other ones we can infer from other dinim, but these are the only two where the Torah explicitly says them. So in that case, going back to our Gemara then, so if we're saying that the Torah that even though the bird is not in your Rishus because you were machpirah, nevertheless the Torah considers it in your Rishus, well that would fit exactly what the Machlokas was saying over here. It would mean Rabbi Lazar is the one who's saying even though you were machpirah, your nezek, you're still chayav for it. Okay, Kisayim, you can prove that. In that case, Rabbi Yechanan would be the one who says that you do have the ability to be machpirah. The problem with that is miyamar Rabbi Lazar hachi. Did Rabbi Lazar really say such a thing? But we find that Rabbi Lazar said something which is the other way around. Gitnan, we learn in a Mishnah. It's actually the next Mishnah on the next flat. If somebody is turning over a piece of dung in Rishus Rabim, which he wants to be able to use it for fertilizer, and at this point the Gemara assumes that hoifich doesn't necessarily mean like literally turning it over, like rolling it along the ground. The Gemara is assuming it can even mean picks it up and transports it around Rishus Rabim. Well, who's the behenacher? And somebody else is damaged. If somebody else is injured by it, somebody else trips on it, let's say, or whatever. He slips on it, whatever, or gets his clothes dirty or whatever, yeah. Chayev benizkar, then you chayev for the nezek. But Amar Rav Elazar, lo yishono elashin iskav and lizkas ben. And Rav Elazar says that this only applies if you meant to be zoicha in this dung. Aval lo yishkav and lizkas ben potter. But if you didn't have in mind to be zoicha in it, then you're potter for any nezek. Because Alma maskir nefotten and zaka potter. Which seems to show that if you maskir your nezek, you're potter. Amar Rav Adabah. That's where the yeah. Yes, but you could argue that the case is when would Rabbi Lazar be saying he's potter if he put it back in the original place? He changed his mind. He decided I don't want him anymore. So he put it back in the because what does it mean? If he didn't mean to be zoichein, the argument would be that he didn't create the borer in the first place. It was sitting there in the Shusat Abim. He moved it elsewhere. But now, when he moved it back to the original place, you could argue that he didn't create the burr. Putting it exactly back where it was, it is undoing what he did. So therefore, again, the burr is there, not by his action, so he should be positive. However, Amar Ravina, Marshal that of Adaba Abalama, Ravina explains, Marshal that of Adaba Abalama Dabadoma, what can we draw an analogy to this din, to this idea of Adaba Abba? What would be the analogy of the case of a classical burr? The Moitzib Bor Megula, imagine somebody finds a pit uncovered in Rishus Rabim, where at that point, whoever dug the pit would be chayav for anything that happened. Ricky So, this other person covered the pit, because of the Gilo, and then he uncovered it again. He's not chayav for anything that happens with the pit, because the pit was already there. He didn't create the Nezik. So therefore, by the same logic over here, this guy moved the Gullo and then moved it back to where it was, and that Rebbe Lazar can well be saying that he caught it without it contradicting what we were saying before. Yeah. However, Amalei Mazutzer Veder Amari Lerabina Midami. How could you compare the two cases? Hasam Lo Istalik Lahu Ma'itirishin. In that case, when you cover the pit and then you uncover it again, when you covered it, you didn't take away the original entity that was there. The burr was still there under the cover. All it is there's a cover. But now you remove the cover. It's exactly back to the same burr that was there before is there now. Over here, when you move the gullo, at that point, it's the equivalent of removing the burr. At that point, there's no burr over there. You put it back. You are creating a new burr. Yeah. So Mazutra argues, the only fair comparison that you can make, if you're going to compare it to a case of a classical burr, is
the question. The same, right?
Yeah, that's the question, yeah. So the only way you can draw an analogy would be if somebody were to find an open pit, the tumama, and he didn't just cover it up with a cover where the pit still exists under the cover. He filled it in with dirt because of a chofra, and then he redug it. Then there's no question. The first burr that was there is gone. and that has disappeared, and now there's a new bird. If any animal falls into that bird, the second guy is going to be chayav, not the first one. So by the same logic over here, you move the golo, that means you move the bird from where it was, now you put it back, that's creating a new bird. Why should your golo say you're potter? Just because you didn't have in mind to yeah. Okay. Elo am Ravashi, shahaf chalapachas mishloisha. Okay, Ravashi says here's a different answer. You could say that Rabbi Lozer is saying, what does he mean? He didn't even pick it up three tefachim, so he didn't make any kinyan on it.
Now we're talking about something
that I get. Right, but that's what we mean. Shahofcha means that, and the Gemara is going to point out, the Lashon Shahofcha seems to imply the fact that he's rolling it rather than actually picking it up. Tosfos has a bit of discussion about
the Golo.
Well, yeah, the Golo. Tosfos has a bit of a discussion about that because here we're talking about something that's Hefker. Even you don't need necessarily picking up three Tefachim to be kind of Hefker. Tosfos gives a couple of answers. That one is, if you pick it up in your hand, you don't need three tefachim. But here, so
you do. Or you don't.
You don't. If you actually pick it up, if the point would be, if you actually pick it up, or that's one opinion. Tosfos says that maybe you only need one tefach. And then in that case, you picked it up one tefach. Maybe you could be koneh from hefker, but you need three tefachim to actually for it to be considered that you literally moved the bird. There's a few. By the way, Hagoyt Habach points out something else as well. It would have to be not only that you didn't pick it up three tefachim from the ground, it would also have to be that you moved it less than three tefachim from its original location. Otherwise, it still is considered creating a new bird.
So if you lifted it up,
let's say one tefach. If you lifted it up, let's say one tefach, and it's still within, three tefachim along the ground, then Rebbe Lozer would say you're potter. Right. You weren't magbiyeh. You need three tefachim up to be koneh, or three tefachim out, even though you weren't koneh, but you did create a new bird. So why, in that case, then why should we assume that Rabbi Lozer Davka has to be doichik and explain the Mishnah as talking about a case where you were rolling it along, picking it up within less than 3 tefachim of the ground. The timer to kines kavan lizke is for, and therefore we're only saying you're only chayiv if you meant to be zoicha in it, which you're able to, again, you may be able to be zoicha with hefker less than that. But ha ein miskavan lizke is for loy, but if you was not intending to be zoicha in it or not, why did he have to go to doicha? Yeah. Loikmo lamai lamidimo, why doesn't he say straightforward? The Mishnah is talking about you picked it up above 3 tefachim. And then we could say that even if you don't mean to be zoche in it, you'd still be chayev because you picked it up three tefachim. So
why?
Rava answers Masnissin Kshite, because Rava Lazar was forced to understand the Mishnah that way, that he picked it up less than 3 tefachim, and therefore when he picked it up less than 3 tefachim, you have to distinguish whether he intended to acquire it or not, because he had difficulty with the expression, with the language of the Mishnah. My area Hopa, what did the Mishnah mention that he turned it over? Listen, he'd be up. The Mishnah should just say straightforwardly, he picked it up, and he picked it up, and we'd be saying that somebody else was harmed by it, that he's chayim. Elo shmami nakol hopa, chlamat mishloishu. Evidently, when it says turning over, means it's within 3 tefachim of the ground, and therefore, the difference would be, therefore, if it's within 3 tefachim, the only distinction that you can make is, did he mean to be zoche in it or not?
So, is that meaning that if you roll it 3 tefachim...
If you roll it beyond 3 tefachim along the ground, that's a different thing. You created a new bird. Regardless whether you were zoche in it or not, you're chayiv on those grounds. If you picked it up less than 3 tefachim,
yeah,
and you weren't intending to acquire it by that, then you haven't done anything. Therefore, Rabbi Lozer can say you're potter. Fine. So if we're going to go that way, then fine. So far, if we say, going back to everything that we've been saying so far, we haven't found a reason to contradict. We said that Rabbi Lozer had said, you're machir, you're nezik, you're still chayev, because one of the two things that Rabbi Shmuel said, it's not in your reshus, but the Torah considers it as if it is. We can't contradict him from his explanation of the next Mishnah, Am Lamed Omer Aleph, because we said we can find a way to answer what he's saying, that it doesn't contradict this concept, because there he wasn't zoche in it in the first place, as opposed to if he was zoche in it and then machir it. Okay. Then let's continue. The implication would be, obviously, Rabbi Lozer is the one who's saying you're chayev, even though you were machir it. Rabbi Yechanan would have to be the one who's saying you're potter. The problem with that is, now let's bring a contradiction to that to that understanding, to that that Rabbi Yochanan would say Potter from a different statement of Rabbi Yochanan. We learned in a Mishnah also on Lamed Amud Aleph, the two Mishnahs over there before we were quoting the second one. Now we're going to quote the first one. If somebody hides a thorn or a piece of glass, let's say he hides it inside a wall, and later on the wall falls down, so somebody gets injured by the glass or the thorn, or if somebody makes a fence around his property using thorns rather than a brick wall like everybody else does, the gedur should not follow Shoset Abim, or if a wall around your property fell down in a Shoset Abim, and somebody else was injured by any of these things, Chayev Veniska, then you're Chayev in the Nezek. Everybody agrees with the Mishnah. But the Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Lo Yishonu Ela B'Mafriya. Rabbi Yechanan says that this only applies if you put your hedge, in the case of the thorns, you put your hedge of thorns exactly by the edge of your Shoset Abim. So like the thorns are hanging out into your Shoset Abim. So if somebody else gets caught on the thorns and then and injured, you're going to be Chayev. But if you were to move back the hedge a little bit into your Rishus, even though the thorns are sticking out and people may be passing by over there, you're still potter. Now, we're obviously not talking about, you know, this extra area. We're not talking that you designated it. You said, you know what, I'm not doing it. From now on, B'nai Rishus Adam can use it. But practically, you do still own it. Practically speaking, though, B'nai Rishus Adam are going to be going on it. So my time of potter, lav misham yahavi led bur birshusay. Evidently, why would he say it's potter? Because it's like the equivalent of a bur on your own property. Where a bur in your own property, you're potter for anything that happens. You have a right to dig a bur in your property. Miklal dechiyuva de bur birshusay rabimu. Evidently, then, according to the mayor, not remainder, according to the Yechanan, any time you have a bur, what?
Esh would be
different. Esh is different, yeah. Because esh can spread, yeah. Miklal the chiyuv of the burger shoset abim. Evidently, then Rabbi Yechanan would hold that you're chayev for any burger shoset abim, regardless whether you're machir or not. Alma machir nizak of chayev. That means Rabbi Yechanan would be the one who'd say he's chayev. You're chayev if you're machir nizakim. How can we say that Rabbi Lazar is the one who's saying you're chayev, and Rabbi Yechanan is saying the one who's your potter? The answer is no. No, you could argue that Rabbi Yechanan would say that if you're machir your nezek, you're potter, even if it didn't, again, even if it didn't fall by onus, even if you deliberately put it there, let's say. Well, mitzamtem, my time of potter. So why taka are you potter if you made your hedge a little bit inside your property, even though the thorns are sticking out in an area where people walk? Mishum de itmar, not because of the question of bur or not. Mishum de itmar Allah, because you should know there was a statement said on that of Amiroim, the Amr of Achab Redi Rebeka. The reason why Rabbi Yochanan would say your potter, Lefishain Darkan Shom Nadam is Kakas Solomon, because people don't usually walk rubbing by on the wall. So therefore, if the hedge ends over here, even though the thorns are sticking out a little bit over here, but the edge of your Shutzat Adam is here, you have people walking too close and getting injured by the thorns, that's their problem.
So it's a specific case.
So it's a specific case, right. We can't draw a conclusion on the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. However, let's continue. Fine. Still, can we say that Rabbi Yochanan would say that you're potter if you master your nezek? We know Rabbi Yochanan says in general the halacha is always like a stam mishnah. What's not? And we learn later in our mesecta, if somebody digs a pit for shoset rabim, and an ox or a donkey falls in it and dies, you're chayev. And the Braitha doesn't distinguish, as long as the burger shoset rabim, you're chayev. The mission doesn't distinguish whether you're master or not. So therefore, Rabbi Yechanan ought to hold that you're chayiv whether you're machir or not. Ela, no. Ma'olam Rabbi Yechanan ala chayiv. So no, we will have to say, Rabbi Yechanan will in fact say that you're chayiv.
Based on this,
that Rabbi Yechanan will have to say you're chayiv, even if you're machir your nezik. So going back to our original case, you dropped your barrel. Yeah, you dropped your barrel. But you didn't clean up the pieces. No, we said not like Rabbi Meir. We said Rabbi Meir would say for sure you're chayiv regardless. Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Lazar would be arguing within the Rabbanim. You dropped it by accident. Can you be machir? Okay, we Rabbi Yechanan on the Chayiv, Rabbi Lazar on the Potter. Fine, in that case, by implication, Rabbi Lazar would be the one who says you're Potter. What about, though, what Rabbi Lazar said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, that even though Bor B'Shus Rabim is not your possession, the Torah considers it as if it was, and makes you Chayiv for it? The answer is, like Kasha, Hodidei, Hodidei. No, because you could say that Rabbi Lazar is, there's two different things. Rabbi Lazar's own opinion is that you're Potter if you're Machir. He's quoting in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, without agreeing with it, that you would be Chayiv. So Rabbi Shmuel is saying you're chayav. Rabbi Yechanan would hold the same way. Rabbi Lazar is saying, fine, Rabbi Shmuel is saying that. I disagree with that. I hold like the other opinions that I'm saying. I'm stating his opinion, but I'm also stating my own opinion that you would in fact be possible. in the end, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. The maskin is chai. So the halacha nitzal lapasheya, tripping is not considered a pshia. So if you tripped and the barrel broke, you're not chayav for what happened at the time. But afterwards, you didn't clean it up. Even if you masked it, you're still chayav.